Right, so Steve, welcome to episode 55.
55,
Steve.
Almost my age.
Almost, not quite. Steve Knapp, how are you?
Fantastic, mate.
Absolutely marvellous. So Steve, you're the sales mindset coach.
Yeah.
I looked online, I like to do my little bit of research, so I go all like kind of a detective and I try and dig out as much information as I can. It says here that your goal is to help businesses sell more by focusing on sales behaviour, sales mindsets, and enabling the sales process.
Yeah.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Well, I mean, I've been in sales, you can tell by the grey hair. won't ask about
your...
I've been in this business, in this selling business for a really, really, really long time.
Yeah.
And I've been around many, many good business owners, many good sales managers, but equally many bad business owners and bad sales managers. And I found that the bad business owner and the bad sales manager tends to have a few attributes that are similar.
Quite, yeah.
They kind of expect the result just by asking for it. They kind of think that they can send their sellers out into the marketplace and just through a little bit of training, they're going to get the uptick in the results that they expect to get.
Of course.
And I'm not saying there isn't a place for sell more and training, but actually I've learned through my career that it's about what happens before you go out to make that sale. So it's a little bit more about the iceberg picture, what's beneath it.
Okay.
So for me, it's about the behaviours. And I think if you, in a behavioural sense, if you're very clear with a seller about what are the right behaviours you want, what you expect to see, what good looks like.
Sure.
You know, they're clear about what it is. You can then, as a coach, as a leader, recognize that, reinforce it, call it out when it's not happening.
Sure.
So there's so much about behavior that I think drives sales performance. I think there's so much about process that drives sales performance. And it's almost like there's so many professions that you need to be trained to carry on practicing.
Okay.
A pilot.
Yes.
A brain surgeon.
Of course.
Yeah. But they're not lucky, right? Yet people say sales folks can be lucky, or they're natural, or they're born.
Yes.
You sell snow to Eskimos. Well, in reality, the good and successful salespeople are those people that know the sales process.
Sure.
So when they fall off it, or when they need it to support success, they've got that, and they know where they are, and
they've
know what to do.
They've got a framework.
Yeah, so I focus on that encompasses mindset, behaviour and process.
Yes. Mm. I think it's really interesting, isn't it, with sales, because everybody says that because someone's a strong communicator, they automatically assume that they're going to be good at sales, etc. You should be in sales, you can sell us, like you've just said,
you can sell snow to Eskimo.
That's not always the case though, is it? Like, the strongest communicators aren't always the best salespeople. They often are the ones that are quite manipulative.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this whole stigma about sales is driven a little bit through that piece about, you know, people being manipulative. I mean, if you think about TV shows, you think about movies, you think about whenever sales is represented, right?
I know what you're going to say.
It's someone a little dodgy, isn't it?
Yeah, true.
Arthur Daly, Del Boy, The Wolf of Wall Street, or whatever. It's always a criminal. It's always somebody that is either somebody that's going to prison because they've pushed something too far, or they're crossing the line.
They're getting very
close, right?
But they make it sexy, don't they, though?
Well, that's the... And therefore, there's this whole piece about... If you feel that you're, if people say, well, you're a natural salesperson, actually, I've come to see that they're more talking about that attribute, about you're a little bit, sort of...
Shifty.
A bit shifty.
Yeah.
I mean, I found that the best sales professionals, the best people to sell, are those people that are probably more analytical, probably people that are more into the detail, probably more curious, right? They're probably asking more questions.
Yes.
Than telling people the answer.
Of course.
You know, in the day gone by, we used to call that something like briefcase diving. You know, I've got one of those. Which one do you want?
Which one? Yeah.
The seller today is really just asking questions and teaching versus telling.
Yes.
Big, big difference. So yeah, I think you know, if you're good at communication, it's going to help.
Yes.
If you've got empathy, high EQ, it's going to help. But if you don't have a natural curiosity, an ability to use data, an ability to bring insight and teach your ideal client something, then you're only going to be successful for a short term.
You're coming stuck.
Yeah.
And I think that you're right with what you were saying there with the EQ side, like EQ versus IQ. I think everyone thinks that IQ is the most important metric.
Yeah.
But it's not, is it? It's the EQ that makes the difference. If you can actually have some awareness and you can show that empathy, as you've just said, that makes such a huge difference.
Well, one of the massive things for me in that sort of Del Boy vision is this piece, and I'm not saying I didn't like Del Boy. I went to see Fools and Horses in London only a few weeks ago. I love it. It's hilarious. But I think this whole piece about ethics, authenticity, honesty, transparency, all of this stuff is really important in a business owner that sells, a salesperson in a sales team, because they're representing not only the company but the sort of the values of that company, and I think that's a really important part. Therefore, if you don't have an EQ, a high EQ to be able to tap into that.
Sure.
You might miss some of the value that comes out of connecting at that very sort of personal level.
Well, yeah, definitely.
Building, the old days, they would always say, people buy from people they like.
Of course.
And they do. People buy from people they like who are like them even more.
Yes.
So being like somebody is actually connecting with them on a level, on an emotional base.
But then even that's being used in a negative light, though, isn't it? The mirroring process. Mm. Even the people use that now to manipulate. Yeah.
Well, don't they? I mean, I remember when that first sort of became predominant in sales, and it must have been mid-90s, early 90s. And I remember coaching salespeople and watching them lean forward like this and then cross
their legs.
And it became almost a joke.
Yeah.
It came almost a joke.
But it's so effective, though.
But it is effective. Yeah. And I think if you are on the sort of the base level, always taking up the fundamentals of these things, they're incredibly helpful.
Yes.
If on a one level you are closing your posture so nobody is going to come into you, but if you're open and friendly, it just has a very, very different place in your mindset,
Of course.
But if you do take it to that level of absolutely matching, I mean, I've been there when people have spoken fast because someone speaks fast, talk slow to this one.
Yeah.
It's almost like you're going to go insane if you try and remember it.
Yeah.
Your notes around your customer would be sort of
off the chart.
Yeah.
Do you think that because people are getting more and more savvy in terms of how the brain works, and you've got all the NLP and you've got Ericksonian, you've got the hypnosis side of it as well, the communication. Do you think because people are becoming more aware, because we've got information more readily available now, do you think people are manipulating the system even more?
Well, I think it's a fascinating point you raise, because I wonder if it is manipulation is the right word.
Right.
If we think about a buyer will only invite you when they've made 57% of the decision, right? So what that means is they're doing so much more research on you than they ever did.
Sure.
When I first started selling and repping around Sheffield, I had my big, I was selling industrial lubricants with Shell. I had my big air captain's briefcase where I had every single brochure of every single product that we sold.
And that wasn't readily available, was it, online?
Because people couldn't research, I couldn't research. I mean, I knew they were a metal cutting factory, or I knew they were a gear manufacturer. So I knew broadly what products they would want, but I didn't have that access to data and information
that we have
today.
Yeah.
So I say selling has never been easier.
Yes.
Selling has never been easier. And if you're coming into sales, you are the chosen generation, because all you need to do to research is at your fingertips.
Absolutely.
Where your point about manipulation, I think, I don't disagree, but I challenge the word. I think using these things to your advantage that now means that you've got in front of them, how do you differentiate yourself from everybody else?
Yeah.
I think that's where having some awareness of these things matter.
Sure.
So things like NLP,
as
an example. I mean, I'm not a practitioner, and I think 25 years ago, I was putting arrows in my throat and cracking them and doing the wood. And maybe you've done the same.
Yeah.
Right. So we've all had a go with them. But just the subtlety of knowing some of the pressure points or the trigger points is the value.
Of course. But not all of them.
But not all of them. And I don't think it's manipulative. I think it's actually probably quite necessary.
Yes.
As a seller in today's world, that you focus on the stuff that not everybody else has.
Of course. Totally. And I think that you're right. I mean, like, we're very much in a... They've got the upper hand almost, haven't they, the consumer now? Because they have, like you just said, they've got all the information. It's almost... it's almost information assisted selling.
Yeah.
Where they have the information and it's assisting them in making the decision.
Well, it's one of the things. It's one of the things I'm worried about the industry, actually, or the profession, should I say, not the of selling, is that, you know, if you think about the buyer, and there'll be buyers watching this, what they're trying to do is put everything online. Because the minute they put everything online, my cost evaporates from the equation, right? Sure. My car, my bonus.
Yes.
All right, that's all gone. So we put it online. The risk is you're commoditizing everything. So if you start to commoditize products, then there's no differentiation in service. There's no value add. So that becomes one risk. The other risk is that AI, artificial intelligence, as it's coming into the sales profession, it started to do this thing called guided selling. Mm-hmm. It's starting to tell salespeople where they should go, who they should speak to, what product they should sell, and what price they should sell it at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you not think that's not just a more advanced version of having a Rolodex that used to have your answers for the objections?
Well, it probably is. And I know there is some amazing technology out there that gives you the proper answer to that question.
If they say this, you say that.
Yeah, and if you've got some technical products, that might be a very helpful tool. I think... The successful sales professional, salesperson, business owner of the future is one that merges the advantage of access of information through the internet, through what the Facebooks, through whatever. The one that is able to use artificial intelligence data and insights and use their EQ.
Yes.
I think that three is going to be the magic formula going forward.
I think you're probably right. It's really good. So sales, I mean, like, this has been your, like, this is 30 plus years, over three decades of sales. I mean, you must love the game.
Yeah, I do.
Absolutely love the game.
I do. I put a post out on LinkedIn showing four decades of sales books. It was really interesting just to see the difference in how covers are produced now, right?
Yeah.
And the first one was by a guy called Richard Denny, Selling to Win.
Right.
And I remember when I used to...
I've got that.
I've got that book. What I love about that is even now it has these top 10 pocket reminders. Things to do, things you should always do after, things you should recall. And I remember this guy, I worked for Calagas at the time and I was at the sales conference, and this guy come bounding down the stairs in a spiff suit, shiny shoes, you know, bold tie, told us how he'd lost $1 million three times, how he'd got it back, and then had this book, Selling to Win.
Selling to Win.
And I'm not saying that was the moment where I thought, wow, sales is for me, because losing a million three times
doesn't sound
brilliant, right? but it was something about that adding to my other experiences that's kept me in sales ever since.
So you cut your teeth with Calagas, knocking on doors.
Yeah.
Wow.
Does that happen anymore?
Do you know what? I don't know. I came into sales the exact same way. Not with Calagas, but with NJ, knocking on doors, selling gas. The market had just deregulated. So we're talking 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
The market had deregulated. In fact, the objections we used to face is they used to think we had to dig the garden up to change the gas supply.
Yeah.
But we did so well. Do you know what I mean? Financially, we made well. I mean, people were making huge savings.
Mm.
But I think that the thing that was really important, and I imagine it's the same for yourself, is that door knocking exercise, it gave you grit.
Yeah,
gave you the attitude, the work ethic. It allowed you to be able to cope with the no's.
Yeah.
And it gave you all the tools that you need. I jokingly say this. I think anybody serious about business should probably spend about 2 years knocking on doors.
Yeah.
Because it shapes you, doesn't it?
Well, it does. I mean, I remember my patch got bigger and bigger as I got more successful. And I remember I used to live in Berkshire, and my patch then moved to Norfolk, Norwich. So I had to get up at 5 a.m.
just to get there.
To be there for 9 o'clock start.
Sure. Right.
Then you spend the day there.
Yes.
And then you track your way back. You know, those power naps that you dread having on the M25. You know, those days when sales was so different.
Sure.
And it was exactly that. You'd knock on someone's door, domestic house. You instantly had to create rapport.
A bond
immediately. So it was a really good way of learning how to build trust.
Communicate.
And all of that stuff. And you know what? Because I was having to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning next time I went to Norwich, it made me very hungry to close the sale.
Of course.
Because I didn't want to be traveling.
You don't want to travel back again, yeah.
So no, there were lots and lots of skills that I guess today are different because we're in call centres, we're looking at LinkedIn, we're looking at Facebook profiles.
They call it social selling, don't they?
They do.
Yeah.
Don't believe.
Tell me your tip. No. The face tells me everything. But just for people that's not watching this, that's listening to it, social selling. So
social selling for me is part of a combination of things you have to do to sell. I might not call it social marketing. Because yes. I think one of the challenges with social selling is if you don't have the background in sales, one of the easiest things that you do is forget to ask for the order. Actually, the first thing you do is forget to ask questions.
Yeah.
The first thing you do is forget to see what problem you're solving. Mm. You're just launching products, you're doing great posts, and you're expecting through ads
people
sales
to
come.
Purchase, yeah.
Now, some products, that will work for.
Yeah.
But for many products, you've still got to have the selling part of it.
Sure.
So I don't discount it as an activity. In fact, I quite like it as an activity.
Yeah.
It can be quite effective. But I think in your business plan, you've also got to have your sales plan as well as your marketing plan.
Yeah,
and if you put these things together,
they work,
it's a combo approach and it works.
I find, and I suppose you'll find it just as much as you are, they're training salespeople all the time, more so than I am. But one of the things that I find is generally people are quite good at selling. It's the closing that they suck at.
Mm.
Do you know, like you've said just then, they forget to ask.
Yeah.
So they'll get them excited, they'll be impulsive, and they'll answer all the questions, they'll provide all the solutions, and then they go to, how does that sound?
Well, I mean, it's almost a little bit where at the beginning I talked about process. And within the process of the sales, there is this thing called close. And before that, there's something called trial close.
Yes.
And it's the salesperson's job to move the sale forward, right? Not just to keep the relationship and conversation going on forever.
Yes.
And one of the things that a sales process brings you is it brings you clarity that you need to be moving something forward.
Yes.
And asking for the order is absolutely valid. And if you've gone to all the trouble of putting the right client type in your sales funnel, they are expecting you to ask for the order.
Yeah.
Right? So if you don't, they're kind of confused.
Yes.
And that's why salespeople lose sales, because
they don't ask for the order.
Absolutely. Now, I'm not saying you ask for that at the very beginning. You've got to know the buyer's buying process.
But like you said, trial close.
Trial close.
Have you heard enough to make a decision?
Yeah. If you went forward, would that be a Tuesday or a Wednesday?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't know this yet. Okay, yeah. One of my favourites is that one, though, just saying to him, have I explained enough for you right now for you to make a decision?
Yeah.
Well, not just yet. No.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you need to know?
Yeah. Well, and I'm not saying that folks out there don't have those skills, and I'm not saying door knocking heightened those, it will be the only answer to that.
Of course.
But absolutely.
It shapes you.
It shapes you.
Yes.
And because you're going to have to get up at 5 a.m. to go to Norwich,
you actually
ask them, is there anything to use yours? Is there anything I've said that you don't fully understand at the moment?
Yes.
That will prevent you from moving forward?
Yes.
Totally.
And then you move into it,
Yeah.
So then after Callaghan's, you went in, that's when you went into Shell, and you spent literally the rest of your career.
The rest of my life.
Yes. In Shell, 20 years, was it?
Yeah, 23 years.
23 years.
Yeah.
And then you retired.
Yeah.
But now you're back.
I did. Well, I was tired.
Okay.
I was tired. I mean, the Shell experience was, without doubt, awesome.
Right.
I have nothing bad to say about Shell.
Sure.
Nothing bad whatsoever. They gave me a great life, and in return I gave them a great
23 years
of me. So we left on a really good position. I was very lucky that I led businesses in the UK, Africa. I designed how Shell sell, which they still do now.
But it
just got to the point a bit like, you know, they were a male orientated company, European. There was a time when oil was at $140 a barrel, so costs were an issue. So there was a whole strategy change. And what Shell had to do was sell assets, change the leadership dynamic to get the right diversity in, and I had the opportunity to jump out.
Yeah.
And when I did leave, I did say, right, that's it. You know, but I must say I got
bored. Yes.
And more than bored, I think I just was able to just reset what was really important.
Of course. What is important?
Well, for me, it's elevating the sales profession, because the stigma that it has, in so many cases, is so thoroughly well deserved.
And that
really disappoints me.
Of course.
But because I don't believe it needs to be that way.
No.
I don't believe it needs to be that way.
But they are con men, aren't they? They're not salespeople. The people that we're talking about now, they're con men.
Well, you see, this is where I hesitate, because if we think even only a year back, less than a year back, the pension industry was banned from cold calling.
Yes.
So is the pension industry full of con men? I don't know. Mm. And you know, when I think about cold calling as an activity, it's still the most successful outreach method.
Cheap, quick, cost effective.
Yeah.
And it works.
So is it a surprise that businesses do it? Where I think it falls down is at the leadership level.
The training. Yes.
And the process. So is this about leaders not knowing the buyer's journey, not knowing how to coach performance, not knowing how to translate the values and the vision of that company into outcomes and activities?
Sure.
So I think it leaves a really good place for people to help. And if you think about some of the challenges in the sales industry, you know, the average tenure of a salesperson in a B2B company,
sure,
is 16.9 months.
Right.
16.9 months.
Yeah, yeah.
The reason for that is because they were promised a commission
that never came
because the targets,
yeah,
were too high.
Yes.
That's a problem of leadership.
Sure. Do you think that that's more linked to the lower market salesperson than it is to a more corporate level salesperson?
No, I mean, this comes out of my work with the Association of Professional Sales.
Right.
So this is probably more
on that
end of
corporate. Because it is a very transient industry as a whole.
Well, it is. So only 5% of sellers have been with a company for more than 5 years now.
Right.
Right. So five years. 5% in 5 years. So these statistics are worrying when you consider we're talking about the right way to sell is through relationships, right? So if I'm thinking about when's the contract up for renewal, 3 years, well, it's going to be a different bum on the seat.
Of course.
That's a risk in the industry.
But then do you not think that that's just kind of linking back to data that we have now, because millennials are so transient with the work as well?
Yeah, bang on.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the issues. And one of the issues is attracting people into sales roles,
yes,
because they see that there is a future in sales,
yeah.
If then you take that to the point of saying, is sales important to the British economy? Nearly everything.
It's going to have to be. We've nothing else left.
Well,
steel's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Manufacturing's on its way.
Yeah. We've got to create wealth. And we've got to create wealth through sales.
Sales, yeah. Yeah.
So it becomes really important that we back sales as a profession, not just as half an hour in a business studies MBA,
no,
but
it starts
to become something in itself.
Yes.
Which is why the work we do with the Association of Professional Sales is looking to take sales as a chartered profession. Mm. Then all of a sudden you have a framework, you have almost that authority position. So that's kind of a long answer to your question, but I do think sales really, really has this real importance and a real,
yeah,
significance
to move forward,
out there, which is where my mission and purpose comes from. Really helping sales as a profession
to flourish.
Absolutely.
Now, yeah. Because I mean, one of the things that you did say is you said that you've, having worked in sales your entire working life, you always did feel a little inferior when declaring what it is that you did at a dinner table. So,
yeah,
you know, when people announced that they were a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, sales was always something that sales always just seemed to pale in significance.
Yeah.
Do you know, so like, do you still feel that way now, or?
Well, I think the answer to that direct question is no, I don't. But fortunately, because I've got 30 years of track record, you know, having designed how Shell International sells,
yes,
is a little bit of a conversation starter.
Yes. Yeah, totally.
Right? And now, having set up my own businesses, I feel more validated.
Got you.
But I could imagine that somebody new into the sales profession,
sure,
if they were around that table,
sure, they wouldn't even put on a business card, will they? They'll put BDM or something like that.
Who are we kidding? What's a business development manager? Are we trying to kid,
yeah,
buyers that
we're not going to sell to them?
But
they do that though, because this, like you said, there's that much of a stigma attached to sales that they'll not even use sales manager,
yeah,
or sales executive,
yeah,
on the business card.
Relationship manager.
Yeah. Happiness customer.
I mean, come on, where does this all come from?
It's good. America, yeah.
Well, yeah, I think the more and more that we're carried away with this negative connotation of a salesperson,
sure,
and more that it's underlined by so many celebrity endorsements or examples of double glazing, secondhand cars, PPI,
sure,
now the pension industry.
Sure.
I mean, it deserves the reputation it's got.
Of course.
So people like you, people like me, we have to work tirelessly to show people there is a right way to do this. And one of the big things about this brand is that I do try to help the smaller guy that might not have access to the resources,
of a big company,
to get some of that some of that from me.
Of course, yeah. Of course. So, I mean, in terms of sales then as a whole, 30 years, time served, cut your teeth knocking on doors, like, why sales originally for you? what got you into sales initially? Was it like university? Did you drop out?
No, I didn't do that. I mean, I come from the East End, and actually getting out of school and getting down the Lido with your mates was much more important, because we were a class of people that the families didn't go to universities. Sure. It just didn't happen. You know, one of my kids now is the first to go out of that side of our family.
Sure.
It was just the social, the way that it was. And we all went out. And actually, for the sake of one line or the other, I could have been the Dell boy versus the more corporate seller.
Okay.
And a lot of my informative years were observing characters like that.
Sure, sure.
I mean, I know everywhere has its reputations, but the East End of London was a particular place for it. And it all started for me, your question, it all started for me from a Saturday job. I worked in a greengrocer's.
Right.
And I used to go to Covent Garden with the owner. And we used to know what we wanted to buy. We used to go and do the deal to buy it. We used to work out what prices we were going to sell it at on way back. So we knew what margin we needed. Yeah. We got back and we dressed the shop to make sure it looked good for the customers. Through the day we sold it.
Yeah.
Through the end of the day we worked out, did we make the profit we needed? And then at the very end of the day, we had to throw away what perished. So we had to write that off our profit.
Yes.
So as a 14, 15 year old, these were just amazing lessons.
In entrepreneurship.
And therefore from that moment on, I always wanted to be somewhere that was working with people and providing some kind of services.
Yeah.
I didn't know what it was going to look like, but that was always what I wanted to do.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what happened then? Was Caligas the first step into
it was. So you know, one of the things that you covet when you're leaving the East End of London is to leave.
Yes.
and I think my parents really always had that, and they moved us out. Moved us out, and we went to live in Berkshire.
Right.
And you know, that was a very different place. You know, Royal Berkshire. We lived in Wokingham, just up from Ascot, Windsor.
Sure.
Lovely place. And from there, so Slough, Caligas was in Slough.
Right.
And I got a job repping for them, covering the home counties.
Got you.
Before it got bigger, before I got successful and it covered Hertfordshire, everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
And so that was it. It went from leaving school, sixth form, to Cala.
Sure.
Cala.
You were there for the best part of 10 years.
I was there a long time.
Yeah.
I was there a long time. I won Sales Person of the Year, which was great. Won a holiday.
Yeah.
Vouched for a holiday. Went to Thailand with my best buddy.
Fantastic.
But left because they didn't give me a sales manager's job.
Oh, really?
Threw my toys out the pram.
Which is usually what happens, though, isn't it? Joe, if we don't get the recognition, I've put it down to three things with why people leave companies. And there's bad management and stuff. But I think the main three is recognition, progression, and finance.
Yeah.
If you can satisfy them three, generally speaking, people will never leave.
I think you're probably right. Working for a good boss, the boss getting it, developing me.
Progression.
Progression
recognition,
one.
Recognition,
yeah. Yeah, I think they're really important. The real nub of this Caligas, though, was my petulance. because, you know, it's almost like I believed at the time that the most successful salesperson should be the sales manager.
Right.
In reality, that's proved to be not the case, and we all know that they don't make the best.
Yeah.
And these employers knew that, I didn't.
Right.
So it was a life lesson.
Sure.
And I threw my toys out the pram.
Right.
And after a period of time of me dealing with this, I said, I'm off. And then went to Shell.
Right.
And they didn't make me a sales manager for a number of years either.
Okay.
Yeah.
really. So, in terms of yourself, like East End of London, moving to Berkshire, was your background? Did you come from a privileged background? Was you working class?
It's an interesting question. I don't often think about the background because, not that I sort of want to disengage with it, but it's such a parallel. It's such a change. Like my granddad was an orphan. One of my granddads was an orphan, and was a docker, East End docker. You know, from the war. So he was in the war, East End Docker. My nan was a tea lady at Dagenham, Ford's in Dagenham.
Right.
So council houses. My other grandparents was a toolmaker and lived in Harold Hill. So real sort of, and I remember when mum and dad bought the house that they bought, they didn't have money for the second month's mortgage.
Sure.
You could take a punt them days,
yeah,
right? So so the background is entirely from a place that isn't privilege.
Yes.
Now, I'm not saying what has transpired subsequently, moving to Berkshire, living in Wokingham, working for two blue chip companies, travelling around
sure.
the world,
sure,
becoming
sure.
senior in a company and being paid to leave,
yeah.
hasn't had benefit along the line.
Yeah.
But the beginnings was very much, you know,
humble
yeah. and having to work.
Yeah.
Having to
yeah.
work, you know.
Which is a fantastic trait to hold.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting though, because, you know, I agree, and it's me, so it's absolutely right. But I did see people in Shell at a certain point accelerating.
Right.
Purely because of their education.
Sure. I think we'd be very naive to not think that a privileged background makes a difference.
Yeah.
Because it's not so much the fact that they get a leg up, it's the fact that their mind's wired differently.
Correct. The way they can engage with people at a different level,
yeah.
more strategic yeah. level.
And financial, if they're used to coming from a little bit more money,
mm.
then the benchmark, the glass ceiling, so to speak,
yeah.
is totally different.
It's a different
well.
Approach. I mean, one of the things that was often said through my corporate career, and I think it's a bit similar now, is I was able to communicate with the senior leaders
yes.
and
both
the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that's the richness of the whole story of my journey.
Absolutely.
That I can communicate
at all levels. Yes.
And I think that's one of the things that my forever life in sales has kind of taught me.
Of course, yeah.
You know,
of course.
To your earlier point, communication is really key.
Yeah. So Calagas versus Shell.
Yeah.
Which company did you prefer?
Well, very, very different. Calla was just selling.
Mm.
Calla was, you know, monthly targets.
Right. The real sales, real
yeah.
gritty.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Volume. Wasn't really interested in profit because prices were set at head office.
Sure.
So it was just the volume.
Numbers.
And we were measured, league tables, star performance.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
it was all that. And
did
I don't
that,
know.
Did that drive you? That kind of, 'cause that some salespeople wouldn't be driven by that at all.
So at the beginning, it very much did. Because I came from the position of believing that's how it was.
Okay, yes.
And therefore, being successful meant that the targets were never punitive. So I never had consequence.
Sure, sure, sure.
So it was always achieve, reward.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was only when I went into Shell did I see the other side of people that were struggling. And that struggle came about because, you know, Britain was closing down things like power stations.
Yes.
It was closing down steel mills. The coal mining industry was just hemorrhaging
and dying.
So I had all these people that were working around me who had targets that were missing because of things around them. And it started to make me see that targets can be good, but they've also got to be based on reality.
On reality, yes.
And as a leader, you've got to be prepared to accept that reality and
yeah.
try and help people find a different outcome.
Yeah.
So which company was better? I loved working for Calla, and it was a great period of time to cut my teeth,
sure.
learn my trade,
sure.
get some confidence, get myself on the ladder. But it would have to be the 23 years in Shell.
Yeah.
I mean, I sit here now and I, you know, we often come to the quiz night, where we are now, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, yeah.
We often come in a quiz night, and if a geography question comes up or an airport question comes up,
you'll know it
because you've been there
so much.
Yeah, yeah, you know. And so that's something that I'm very, very grateful
for. It's made you a cultured traveller as well.
Well, an airport, a coach,
yeah.
and a hotel.
Marvellous. So coming back to the present right now,
yeah.
then. So you, at the minute you're doing your sales consultant. But the real push is the sales mindset, coaching, academy. Is it a club? Is it?
Yeah.
Really pushing.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, there are two things. There's the consultancy side, which is me, Steve Knapp Sales, takes what I did with Shell, makes it relevant to that mid-sized business
sure.
owner.
Systemize. Yeah.
Process,
yeah.
behaviours,
yeah.
and just make sure that we follow a methodology
sure.
that unlocks your sales potential.
Yes.
I think the focus here is more on the sales mindset coach brand, which actually is that place where it is. There's a Facebook community, workshops, all of the things that I know, you know, you're a strong advocate of, John. Really bringing people together to share experiences, to get learning going, to get dialogue going, and ultimately to help to help them overcome some of the barriers, or actually just give them a few things that they don't even know they need to know to help them.
So in terms of that, like, so this is a relatively new start now, isn't it, for yourself?
Yeah.
So you've been doing it for what, was it a couple of years?
Well,
it?
So the consultancy is two. This is probably about a year and a half.
Yeah. How much resources do you allow yourself to reach out for help with? Does your family get involved? You said you've got three daughters.
Yeah.
Do you get your wife involved with it, or is it just you?
Well, it is just me. It is just me. It is an individualistic passion that they don't share.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
They clearly give me support.
Of course.
But I remember when we first started the Facebook page and the group, my daughters were the ones that were liking all the posts.
Likes, yeah.
And it was lovely, the support. And you know, when you see them sharing some of the stuff you do, it's a lovely feeling that they're connected.
Of course.
Connected of course. To it. But no, I work very much with a group of people now that I outsource stuff to,
yes.
Because I just can't do it all myself.
Of course.
But I would say all of the engagement, all of the advice, all of the responses is stuff that comes directly
from you,
from me.
Yeah.
Because that's so important that this remains the core of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Because that's what it's about.
I mean, how does that impact your family life? Because, like, you are so consistent with it. You know, like, there's something on a Sunday through the weekend, all through the week. And you're very, very consistent. How does that play out with you and your relationship with your family? Do you
mean,
like, does it cause a strain?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think my daughters are all teenagers. One is not. One is 20.
Right.
She's not a teenager anymore.
So
that sort of gives the top end of the age. So they're quite independent.
Sure.
My youngest being 15. So that role of dad has changed.
Yeah.
And actually, if any of you out there have three daughters of that age, you know that your role of dad is very much upon request.
Yes.
Or being allowed to get involved. So actually, it doesn't impact greatly, and I think one of the things about this product and about what I do is I'm in total control of it, and I think this bit it was interesting because in the corporate world this became a really big thing, like balance, work-life balance, and you never landed it that this was the formula. It's always what's right for the person, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I find therefore that just sort of maybe sneaking an hour or so here or popping in. It's quite liberating and quite free, and very much different to like the time I worked for Shell was a global role.
Of course.
By the end of it,
all consuming as well.
All consuming. Yeah. So I would have telecons and webinars that would start 6 a.m. so we'd catch Australia, all the way up to 7 p.m. to be talking to America.
Of course.
So actually, my life has now become so much better.
Sure.
That we spend. And I'm not sure they enjoy this.
Do they enjoy that?
I'm around more. And I think you know, that probably puts its own individual strain on things. You know, do you not think you should go out?
Yeah.
You know, do you not think you should go and do something? But yeah, staying away from home. It was 1 year with Shell. And I'm not proud of it, but I was away for about 120 nights in 1 year.
Right.
120 nights.
That's a lot, isn't it? Yeah.
And that's a lot of weekends.
Yeah. Isn't it? Yeah, I know a friend of mine like him. I mean, he's quite high in lots of. Well, he's travelled a few different companies now, but in the freight industry,
right?
And he's in a different country 2 or 3 times a week,
yeah.
Which were great when he was a single guy, but he's married with 2 children now, and so it's a real strain.
It's a real strain. But no, I mean, it's something that they entirely support.
Sure. Does your wife still work as well?
No. She's actually, she does. She's a part-time teacher at the school, but. At classical, does she go out to work 5 days a week? But everybody, female on the line, or the men who are sort of a bit more, you know, a different generation to me, so say, well, that's his work, raising a family and all that. It is. And you can't say right for wrong answering that question.
Of course.
But she did used to work for Shell.
Yes.
All the years back. And
And that's where you met.
It's where we met.
And is that, did you wave your fist at Shell and say, God damn you?
Well, actually, it was really funny because she took voluntary severance from Shell. I took voluntary severance from Shell. So we both had, but no, I actually go, thank you. And actually, what was really sort of, one of my things I talk about in my syllabus is sales and marketing alignment. So this is sales and marketing working together.
Of course.
I just clearly took it to an extreme.
Because your wife was marketing. Absolutely brilliant. And the reason I'm asking this so much is because I'm a big believer that I don't think that this work-life balance is a realistic approach. I think it's a bit of a myth.
Right.
And I find that from my own personal experience, is that if you can try and, rather than trying to balance them, if you can try and integrate them, then it works really, really fluidly together. Whereas if you're always balancing things, like I've spent a bit of time with my wife, I spend a little time with the work, I think it's really difficult to do that. And so I've always found that an integration works pretty well.
I think that's a good word. I think integration's a good word. I mean, I think, you know, the work-life balance piece sort of drives you to make choice. Right, where integration, it's almost like you're owning the outcome, you're being proactive around it. I think it adds a complexity though, because, you know, social media, as an example, many people who are watching this will be running businesses where social media is a really important part.
Of course.
So things can creep in that if I'm not on it, am I missing out?
They call that FOMO, don't they?
FOMO.
Fear of missing out.
I've seen that in some posts, and I've just never understood what it is. So I've learned something there. Fear of missing out. Well, I mean, I think fear of missing out can wait till tomorrow.
Yes. But do you know what, though? It's absolutely right. There's so many entrepreneurs that feel that they have to react immediately to things rather than thinking, I can do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, it's 7 o'clock at night. Do you know, like, me doing it now is not going to change anything.
Well, because you're not going to read it anyway.
Until tomorrow morning, so why not just leave it till tomorrow?
And I wonder whether that comes a bit with you. I mean, you asked me about, do I feel comfortable saying what I do at a dinner table now? I said I do, because I feel validated. I wonder when you get to a certain experience, you do that because you feel you can.
Yes.
But I can imagine the pressure on somebody starting out in business or younger in business to respond can be quite destructive. And I think using people like yourself, people like me, to help them prioritise, find that balance, find that integration, to work it out,
of course,
I think is really, really helpful.
Do you think it's more about the fact that they've grown and they feel confident, like you've said, you feel validated, or do you think it's more of an age thing where we've reached a certain level of maturity as well?
Well, it could well be. I mean,
because there's a lot of people that are really, like, they'll not post the stuff that they want to post, they'll not do the videos that they want to post, they'll not even comment on other people's things because they fear what the backlash could be.
Yeah.
Whereas I think that when you are confident in yourself and you've got self-confidence, or you reach a certain maturity point, you stop really caring so much about what the people's opinions are.
I mean, I think what you learn is to let things go as well, right? So not everything bothers you, not everything troubles you.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the certain things about what they call the social footprint, don't they?
Yes.
That actually you can leave bad things behind. So sometimes it's best just to let them go.
Mm.
And maybe a maturity allows you to let things go.
Yeah. Do you face much backlash yourself online from people? Do people argue back with?
I like it. I like it to a degree. I like it to a degree because I like the contrary position. I like being challenged.
Sure.
I like to see if what I know is relevant and holds up, and if it helps.
Sure. How does it make you feel then when someone calls you out on something that their beliefs is their opinion is different to yours? Like, is your immediate response like, no, you're wrong, or are you like, well, actually, I can see it from another side?
I think my first reaction is that I'm right.
Okay. That's the man side.
I think my first reaction is I'm right. And probably one of the things that's been consistent in my career is that ability to drive forward plans and outcomes and objectives is dominated by that.
Yes.
So I don't see it as necessarily a bad thing.
Sure.
I am a big reflector. So even if it's 10 minutes, 5 minutes, an hour a day, I'll quite often go back and say, no, that was a good point.
Right.
So the ability to reflect, I think, is important. But on social media, I don't mind. I don't mind at all.
Sure.
I think it's only when it starts to get, if it gets personal,
vicious,
or actually starts to challenge some of the, making you look a little bit silly or something like that.
Of course.
But then I think you can be man enough just to take it offline and just say, did you mean that?
Do you want to talk?
Do you want to talk? And I think that's not a bad thing.
Of course.
So I think it adds a dimension, a challenge, but I think, yeah, it's more about knowing who you are, and therefore I know that I am quite decisive, but I know that I am a reflector, and we'll come back to that.
So like, in terms of when you're putting yourself out online, then there's some real big names out there. What's in the sales industry, isn't there? What's got global followers as well? Yeah. Like the two what comes to mind, you've got like Grant Cardone, who's, you know, worth half a billion, so he's very successful at what he does, got a strong following. Then you've got the Wolf of Wall Street, you've got Jordan Belfort, who's on the scene now and he's really hitting hard. Do you find that, like, because it's very easy for you to try and compare and think, well, do you know, like, can you compete with them when they're running at that level with what seemingly seems like bottomless pots of money to advertise? Do you know, does like, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think you just have to.
Good answer.
I mean, I think you just have to. I mean, I'm not Grant Cardone from the first outset. I don't have his budget. I don't have his track record in this kind of selling and environment. I mean, these workshops, these big stage events. I mean, 23 years I was with Shell International, and I would talk to Shell people.
Sure.
So he's in a very different place. Some of his messaging, I repel against.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the claims,
sure, absolutely,
I repel against, because I don't think it's anybody's place to set a belief that you're going to succeed just by doing it.
Of course.
I think it's an enabler.
Yes.
And I think how you adopt it is down to you. I'll help you, but I can't guarantee it. So I think some of that is a high risk, but some of the quality and some of the mindset stuff, I think, is really worth in Grant Cardone's perspective investing into.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, some people are more the showman.
Sure.
And that's great.
Sure.
I have a very different view about Belfort, as an example.
Yeah.
And I'm amazed that people sign up.
Of course.
I'm amazed that people sign up to
that. But we know why that is, though, don't we? If we like look back to what we've just been talking about, it's because it's been a
Hollywood.
Yeah, it looks sexy.
Yeah.
And so people, I remember reading the Russell Brand's, one of his latest books, and he was saying about the reason why he got into drugs and the things that he wears, because the lifestyle that he'd seen, what looked seductive and sexy, was that's what they all did.
Yeah.
So he just thought to be cool. Yeah, to be cool, I have to be doing them same kind of things.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly the case here, isn't it? Why people are signing up to his stuff.
Yeah.
Because of that reason as well.
Well, it is. And, you know, I mentioned Richard Denny having a million and losing it, and I kind of said that was cool. Or I didn't quite say that. But it was coming back down to the ethics, coming back down to the legality, coming back down to the destroying people's lives.
Right.
And I'm not going to be able to be picked up by his lawyers watching this. It just interesting that your personalities sell different things.
Sure.
And attract different people
to it. And I think the thing is, I mean, I don't know if you've actually read the book or listened to the audio or something.
Yeah.
There's actually some really good, I mean, it touches a lot on NLP.
There is so much in it, right?
And
there is so much
stuff,
in it. And like all these things, I said earlier, didn't we? Sorry, we said earlier, take bits.
Yes.
Take bits.
It. Kick it around.
Take
test
bits.
Test it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's more for me the brand positioning and the personality.
Of course.
That
of course.
I think people that are attracted to the sales mindset coach as a brand, because I'm so overtly visible, you talked about consistent, there is something about the personality and something about the values that I portray that attracts my people.
To you, Well, there's a saying, and I hate this saying, by the way.
You're going to say it though, aren't you?
And I say it because it actually makes a lot of sense, but I hate the saying. The saying is, your vibe attracts your tribe.
Right.
And it's horrible. Everything about it is horrible, but it just actually makes so much sense.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people that are, how can I say, they're probably dimming their light so they don't shine too bright on other people, when actually they should be letting themselves
flourish,
and to themselves. Yeah. So a year and a half into the sales mindset coach, like being consistent, pushing the stuff in there, getting little interaction initially, because that's what happens with social media.
Oh, it is, yeah.
How did you make sure that you stayed consistent throughout this time when no one were listening, or seemingly wasn't listening?
I think it's probably like any business, whatever channel you decide to develop it on. It's starting from a position of having a plan.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because I think you could go on tomorrow, today, set up a Facebook group and start it.
And expect.
But it's part of the plan, isn't it?
Yeah.
So one of the things that I learned very quickly, what made the group successful, was having a structure.
Sure.
I talk about process.
Yes.
Talk
yes,
about process.
Yes.
Having a structure. So there's a syllabus we follow. So consistency in the syllabus, meaning yep. I could build content
sure.
off the syllabus.
Sure.
I think then turning that syllabus into products helps.
Yes.
So having the ability to sell products.
Yep.
And I think the plan was then also to take it into workshops.
Mm. Which is what you've been doing as well.
Which is what I've been doing as well. So that online, offline, online mm. model. So I think the business plan, having those components in it, was what ensured that we
stuck to it. Yeah, commitment and follow yeah. through with it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and because it is, if you are going online, it is a big risk, right? You go out there and you say, here
yeah,
I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And no one likes it or talks to you.
And I remember one of the first things I felt when I left Shell and started going networking. Oh God, I imagine the people who saw me in the networking, I recall them saying, we didn't understand a word of what you just said. It was all corporate. So I was probably going into these networking events.
Yeah.
Now, we spoke before we come on here about networking and the value of it.
Sure.
And I was probably going to a place talking about Steve Knapp Sales Consultancy, where actually...
They didn't understand what the consultancy meant. Yeah.
Because it's not what they wanted or needed. Sure. So I think being prepared to change your approach as well
yes.
when you're getting feedback mm. is important.
It is, yeah. I mean, I often say to people that if you confuse them, you'll lose them.
Yeah.
And I think that's very vital with sales.
Well, let's see if people like that phrase more than tribe and vibe, John.
Yes, leave a comment. If you prefer your vibe attracts your tribe, type yes, number one. And if you prefer the other one, write number two down. And we'll see which one wins. What we've just been saying ties into the next kind of question I've got for you, Steve, then, is like traditionally, and this is not, it's not a surefire bulletproof system, but traditionally, salespeople are quite badly organised, aren't they?
Right.
Would you agree?
Yes.
Are you one of them kind?
Yes. No.
No.
No. I'm generally a very relaxed individual. But in my professional life, I'm very
in control.
Very much, and it would be bad to talk about process if it wasn't something
sure,
that
sure.
I, you know. Use, and it doesn't mean that, you know, I don't have flexibility, because
sure.
actually an example is I like building things, so I like the phrase building the plane and flying it at the same
okay.
time.
Yeah.
I don't mind trying something, testing it, coming back mm. agreeing that's the way to go.
Sure.
So I'm not rigid.
Yeah.
But I think anything needs to have structure,
sure.
consistency,
sure.
because then you can learn from it, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
If you know what you're doing and you know how you're performing against it,
yeah.
you know how you're measuring up.
Absolutely. I mean, like I often say to people that you can't plan your day unless you know how to plan your life.
Yeah.
You know, how do you know what to do each day
yeah.
if you
yeah.
don't know where you're going?
Yeah. yeah. It's like sales calls, right? So how many people watching this are going on a sales call tomorrow but haven't
planned
it?
Yeah, yeah.
They're just going to go.
Sure. No script. No idea what they're going to say.
Yeah. What does a good
no
outcome
research.
Look like?
Yeah.
What might the client think? What yeah. might be their reaction?
What's the objections that I'm going to face? How am I going to overcome
right.
them? Yeah. yeah.
So just a simple thing like that is structure that I build into my day.
Of course.
And I try to translate to other folks
into
that
as well.
Yeah.
yeah. What motivates you now, Steve? So clearly you've done well. I mean, to be senior management, global salespeople
yeah.
involved
yeah.
across the world with Shell, 20 years, 30 years in the game. Financially, you were stable enough to retire.
Yeah.
Like, is finance a driver for you, or what motivates you?
Well, now when you talk about family, what role do they play?
Yes.
They play that financial motivator.
Especially now they're getting, like, coming out of the teenage years at the university.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So, yes, I mean, there is still a need or a desire or a want to be rewarded and create
sure.
independence for the three girls. Absolutely. But I think there's a number of things that is driving me now, and that's a little bit more around getting this Elevate Everywhere, this sales mindset coach piece out there broader.
Sure.
So things like there's a book on its way.
Yes.
There's more workshops on its way.
Brilliant.
There's more training packages out there. So the motivation is to scale.
Sure.
And who knows? take on a sales mindset coach in the south of the country, start to franchise. And I think that's the art of the possible. So what motivates me is the potential to create something that when I do retire for a second time,
right, you got a legacy,
I can sell.
Right, okay. Oh, you want to exit, right, okay.
Potentially.
Yeah.
You know.
Do you not think that, like, would you like to see the girls coming into the business?
I think that one might. I think the others are wired a bit differently.
Okay.
So my middle one is just doing psychology, sociology. So she's very, could be quite useful for my business, business way. We'll see how that goes. I guess we've never been a family that the children have followed on in the tradition of.
Yes.
But who knows? Okay. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows?
Yeah, brilliant. So just to, obviously to bring this into a landing now then, so if you could go back to a 20-year-old Steve, what would you tell him?
What would I tell him? I mean, gosh. I would tell him invest in your development.
Sure, yes.
Invest in your development. Invest in your network. Mm. And invest in making your process as integrated into your behaviours as you possibly can. So development, become the best you can be in the market you're in.
Yes.
Know what's going on, know who the movers, shakers are, the changing trends, the data, the insights.
Brilliant.
The second one is build up your network. I left Shell after 23 years. I wish I'd built that sales network for the 23 years I was there. I had to start again.
Start from scratch, yeah.
Mistake. Mm. So if you build your network now. And the third one, build that process into your day-to-day working. Automate it as much as you can, because that's what's going to liberate your time and create, generate your wealth.
Fantastic. And then if you had to give just one piece of advice to whether it's a startup or a business that's just starting to grow, or someone who's just thinking about getting into business, what advice would you give them?
Give it a go, and if it doesn't work, change it.
Sure.
Don't let the fear of not doing it stop you doing it.
Sure. Brilliant. Steve, I could talk to you all day. Really, I mean, there's some stories we could probably go about in sales as well. Steve, thank you so much for your time. For everyone that's been watching it or listening to this, where can they find out a little bit more about what you're up to?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, Steve Knapp, and I'm on Facebook, the Sales Mindset Group, and the other platforms as well, but they're the two main ones.
Sure, so for everybody else, what we'll do is we'll put a link on there to there as well. Steve, thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.